This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 JOY 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
At 17, Chris's church introduced him to the leader of a program designed to turn him straight. And eventually, believing he needed to be cured of his sexuality, he was desperate enough to try it. And Chris recalls that every week, members spoke about their sins and they learned about the spiritual and experiential reasons that had led them to turn gay. He speaks of being so ashamed and guilt-ridden that he remained completely celibate for years. In his words, "It was a pretty lonely way to live, really, but that's what I felt I had to do." He believed there were demons inside him and was desperate to be healed. Can you imagine the fear that he must have felt? He prayed to God, asking him to either heal him or kill him. Heal him or kill him. We know that conversion therapy, far from going away, is actually expanding in Australia. It's just going further underground. Organisations are changing their names and their public profiles, but they're still doing the same insidious and harmful work. Prime Minister Turnbull and Health Minister Hunt urgently need to lead the conversation, to work with the states and territories, to engage with experts, to hear survivors, and to stamp out this harmful practice once and for all. No one else should have to feel the fear and shame that Chris felt for so many years.
It's Wednesday the 11th of July. Welcome to our nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host, Dean Arcurie. Tonight on the show, we're looking at the harmful practice of gay conversion therapy. The audio you just heard was of Green Senator Janet Rice sharing Chris's story of gay conversion therapy in Parliament. Tonight, Chris, as well as Robert, will share their past experiences of this therapy with all of us, as well as a further conversation with Senator Janet Rice, as we explore what gay conversion therapy actually is and what we can do to not only regulate this so-called therapy, but to stop it. Stop it causing further harm to LGBTI Australians around the nation.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427 JOY 949, email on air at joy.org.au or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
Gay conversion therapy is still happening in Australia. Currently, the Victorian government has launched an inquiry into this so-called therapy with hopes to bring an end to the practice. Queensland's Health Minister has said he's seeking to determine if more power can be given to Queensland's Health Ombudsman in a bid to crack down on the therapy. And WA's Health Minister has restated his opposition to gay cure therapy, saying people who come across professionals promoting counselling therapies should report them. But what does gay conversion therapy actually mean? It may not be as overt as you think it is. Now in The Informer, we'll hear from Chris and Robert as they share their past experiences trying to rid themselves of their homosexuality through this so-called therapy.
My experience with gay conversion ideology started when I was really, really young, growing up in church. And I was hearing all sorts of things about gay people, that they were abominations, that they are sick, that they are sinful, that they'd made choices to be gay, even that they were demon-possessed. And I guess, even though I was a child, when I heard those things in church, and sometimes they were, you know, it was overt messaging, sometimes it was really subtle, but when I heard those things, I really took them to be about me. Particularly when I was about 10, I realised that I might be gay when I was about 10 or 11. And so those things that I'd heard in church and that messaging around homosexuality being something that's wrong with you became part of my identity, and it became part of how I saw myself. And so I saw myself as sick. I saw myself as perverted and as an abomination, as someone who just was not okay being who they are.
You know, I came out only about 4 and a bit years ago, and I'm in my mid-50s now. So I've hidden my sexuality for most of my life, even though I knew about it. 10 years ago, I was married, and the horror, being a Christian, and I was evangelical fundamentalist Christian. So at one point, I was state director for the Australian Christian Lobby. For 5 years, I was president of the Christian school in Mombulk. And it was a horror to think that I was gay, because the Christian community is so against gay people. So I thought, well, I need to do something about this. I need to fix it. So I sought out help from my GP and my counsellor at the time, because I was having therapy for depression, because I was severely depressed. And he said, well, you know, you're gay. We don't fix that. That's normal. I wouldn't listen. I was so convinced that, you know, there must be something in my past that had caused me to be like that. I bought into the idea that it was my mum or my dad that had caused me to be like this. I then went to the church and I spoke to one of the pastors at City Life at the time, where I was going, in Monturner. And he said, oh, yes, we can help you with that.
You know, even when I was 11, I thought that I may have demons in me. And so when I came out at 16 and I spoke to my pastor about my concerns and my worries about being gay, and he suggested that there was a way that I could be healed from it, I jumped at it because I was desperate. I was really scared. I spent so many years as a kid really frightened to death of hell. I really believed that that was where I was going, and it was scary.
For about 6 months, I'd go every once or twice a week, and I would have this gay conversion therapy where they tried to... It was very painful. Every night I would go, I would burst into tears at some point, you know, more than once sometimes. I had to do all sorts of things, like I had to wear an elastic band and flick it every time I had sexual thoughts, which of course is every night. And if I'd get an erection at night and have sexual thoughts, I had to have a cold shower, which I did. Hands up, I did it all, because I thought that's what you had to do, because I didn't know any better.
When my pastor at the time told me that God could heal me and that there was organisations out there that helped people to change, I was really excited about it. I was really relieved, because up until then I was really worried that I was always going to be that way and that it was going to be something that would ruin my life. So it was a 9-month course, and there were so many different courses available at that time, and they all had different ways of running. The one that I went to was a 9-month course. We'd meet every week, and it ran a lot like Alcoholics Anonymous, like that style of support group, I suppose you'd call it. We purchased these really thick textbooks. It was a manual to the course that was full of, you know, it talked about sort of pseudo-psychological reasons for being gay, and talked about how broken sexuality could be healed. So we would sit in a sermon about the chapter that we'd read that week. We'd have homework to do. We'd have to answer questions in the book. We'd have a time of worship, and then we'd all split off into small groups, and they'd split us into boy and girl groups, and we would confess our sins to each other, and we would talk about the struggles that we'd had that week with our sexuality, and then we would be anointed with oil. So it was really a lot like a support group AA style of ministry. I think the damage that came from it was that it confirmed and really hammered home all of that messaging from when I was a kid, that I'm broken, that I'm not okay the way I am, that who I am is not okay with God, that homosexuality is an abomination. All of that stuff really got hammered home. And I, when I left, of course, I was still gay. I was probably gayer than when I started. But, yeah, when I left, I was, I mean, not only disappointed because I'd really sort of been sold this idea that it was the answer, and here I was still gay. I was even more convinced that I was broken.
After I'd done the gay conversion therapy, I went on this manliness course, and there was this most gorgeous, and I won't describe him in detail in case he listens to this by any chance, because I don't want him to know that I fell in love with him. And he never knew, because he was just the most gorgeous looking person. He got the most wonderful personality. He just pressed all my buttons at once, and I thought, shit, I can't do this. I can't, you know, I'm still gay.
Basically, after that, I really desperately went about trying anything and everything that I could possibly find to try and change. So I went to exorcisms, I was reading books, I was going to other ex-gay ministries, different prayer nights and conferences and all sorts of things. So really desperately trying anything that I could to give it over to God and find some kind of healing. Obviously none of it worked.
We've moved down to Narre Warren just recently, and I thought, well, time I ought to see if I could find a local church that was welcoming. So I've started to scan around and trying to find it. Of course, they all aren't. And one church in particular, I got very irritated with them because they wouldn't tell me what their position was. So I did some secret shopping, and they offered me gay conversion therapy there and then. So it's still going on, and it's still rife in the church. The attitude is that you choose to be gay, and that because you've made a choice, you can make an unchoice. You can choose not to be gay. But, of course, none of them would try and choose to be gay to prove the point.
The way that it was presented to me was as an ex-gay ministry. It was an answer to a problem. You know, it's funny, you know, the church taught me that I was broken, and then, you know, lo and behold, the church has this way to fix it.
I don't think that the church will be won over by theological arguments. I think the church will be won over by them seeing gay people and understanding that we are not a threat. And I think this is a culture clash that has come out about over the last 50 years since the gay community has become more visible. It was possible 50 years ago to say, well, there aren't any gay people because you never saw them.
It's not something that's openly talked about anymore. I mean, years ago, ex-gay ministries used to visit churches and do information evenings. But they don't do that now. It's very much underground now. I think probably public backlash and a change in public opinion around homosexuality and the way that we treat people based on their sexuality has changed a lot in the last 10, 15 years. And so I think most ministries that peddle this ideology that being gay is broken aren't able or aren't comfortable to really publicly say what their intentions are.
I want to thank Robert and Chris for sharing their stories with us tonight. My full interviews with both of them will be available to download tomorrow morning via the Joy website at joy.org.au/The Informer. If you come across any or hear about any organisations or individuals practising in conversion therapy, I encourage you to notify the Australian Health Practitioner Regulatory Agency at ahpra.gov.au. That's ahpra.gov.au. Or you can call them on 1300 419 495.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
Gay conversion therapy causes depression, anxiety, self-loathing, and in some instances, drives individuals to self-harm. A few weeks ago, Senator Janet Rice shared Chris's story of experiencing gay conversion therapy and the damage that that caused him in Parliament, calling on Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull to show leadership and ensure that the harmful practices of gay conversion therapy were stamped out. Last week, Thomas Morgan and I sat down with Senator Rice to discuss how parliamentarians can legislate a practice which in Australia is happening within religious organisations around the country.
To think that it was still going on in Australia in 2018 is just appalling, and that there are still, you know, young gay people who are being really traumatically disturbed by their churches.
How is that something on a political level that we can combat?
I think that's a really good question, and it's just, you know, what does it mean? What can you outlaw? And I know the Victorian and the Queensland governments have been grappling with this. And so in Victoria, you know, the Health Services Commission is tackling it through it being fraudulent practices. So at its core, if you've got this, you know, so-called therapy that is clearly not successful, is not based on any success rates, any logic, any science at all, but they are presenting it as being something that's going to be successful to sort of cure people of homosexuality, clearly it's fraudulent. But it is, I mean, I think it is, it's part of this, it's cultural change that we need, but the churches that are still putting young people through this need to be told that it's just not on, that it's unacceptable to be putting people through this psychological torture. And to do that, there need to be some sanctions. They need to know that if they are doing that, that there are going to be something that happens because of that. So what we're calling on at a federal level is that the federal government need to show some leadership, and at a federal level to really bring together the states, bring together people who have experienced gay conversion therapy, bring together the various state legal bodies to work through what's the best way of tackling this at a national level, and in particular what's the best way of tackling it so it just doesn't get driven more and more underground. Because that's what I think has, you know, what's so surprising and what's really worrying that's come out in the last year is the fact that people thought it had gone away, but no, it's just been driven underground.
Mm. All of these issues were always seen as very black and white.
Mm. It's sort of culture
wars. Us versus religion, yeah. One versus the other. You know, it must be this or that. But when we speak about conversion therapy, there are so many layers in regards to what it actually is, how it's actually happening, and the way in which people are dealing with the repercussions of going through it. How do you think we can combat that in a public conversation? Because you're having these conversations on air with us now, also, you know, in Parliament. How can we combat that space of religion bad, everything else this?
I think there's a role for religious organisations that don't support the views of the ACL to speak out and to say that they accept people who are LGBTI and they accept them in their church and they accept them for who they are. And increasingly we know that's the case. And we know that the majority of people who have a religious faith in Australia, for example, supported marriage equality last year. And so I'm sure an even greater majority of people of a religious faith in Australia accept LGBTI people for who they are. They accept their sexuality, and they also would understand that it is just futile and damaging to people to try and change their sexuality. It just doesn't work. So I think we're on this journey of cultural change in our country, and we need to continue on and make it a bit faster, I think, so that the people like those who are still proposing this so-called therapy, and people like the ACL are very much seen as just a tiny, tiny, hurtful, hateful minority who don't then have any broad support, even within religious organisations. And so that they will realise that they are out of step, even with the people that they are proposing and purporting to represent. But, you know, that's the journey that we're on of this cultural change. And, you know, we have come a long way. If you think about where we've come in over the last 30 or 40 years, but we've still got a long way to go, and we just need to keep on keeping on.
So with religious organisations generally, they do tend to be fairly top-down. So is it not a bit of a struggle when you have a doctrine that tends to demonise homosexuality? You have chaplaincy programs that are part of the school state system, and recently by the statements from the Pope in regards to what defines a family. How much of a struggle is there between the top-down and bottom-up approach when it comes to engaging the religious community?
Well, I think certainly because they're top-down, and it tends to be the more conservatives of older people who are in those positions of power, change can be a lot slower and a lot longer coming, but change is occurring within those religious organisations as well, even with that sort of strong hierarchy. I mean, clearly, if you had much more sort of grassroots power, and there are some religious organisations that do have more grassroots power, they are going to be naturally be able to move more quickly. But I remember talking to Anthony Venn Brown a year or so ago, who, you know, he was a Pentecostal minister, and he had his own, you know, really enormous struggle to try and
come to terms,
but to support both his faith, to be comfortable with both his faith and his sexuality. And he was of the view that, you know, even those very anti-gay churches at the moment, you know, the Pentecostal churches, they are going to come round. Over time, they are going to change. And it's for that reason that we're talking about, because over time you'll find that even the people who are there, you know, participants of those churches, or, you know, parishioners at the Hillsong Church, that they are actually there, and particularly the younger people in those communities are going to acknowledge and accept that, you know, that homosexuality is just absolutely fine. And there will be people within those churches themselves, obviously, who are LGBTI, who will be comfortable with their sexuality. And then it will be a journey for them to reconcile their faith and their sexuality. But in time, the church is going to change.
And so during this transitional time, does government have a responsibility, particularly in the cases where they are sanctioning chaplaincy programs and religious engagement with youth, to put up some parameters here?
Look, I think absolutely. And the roles that government have, they should make the most of those. So for things like programs, you know, the chaplaincy program that costs $170 million a year, or I think is what the chaplaincy program costs, it just shouldn't happen. We should be having, you know, secular counselling in our schools rather than chaplains that can be proselytising such dangerous positions. And similarly, any church school or church organisation that receives public funding should not have religious exemptions that are damaging and are dangerous. I mean, I can, in our free society, I can accept that if you're a church organisation, you're off there on your own and you're not engaging with the wider community, it's going to be hard for government to say, we're going to completely control what you do in the name of your faith. But certainly where there are religious organisations and agencies that get funding, a condition of that funding is that they have to comply with the laws of the land, which means not discriminating against LGBTI people.
Our full interview with Senator Janet Rice, as well as her speech in Parliament, where she shared Chris's story, will be available to download tomorrow morning via joy.org.au/The Informer.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
We all agree that gay conversion therapy is wrong and the practice of this harmful therapy should be stamped out. But you might be wondering what it is that you can do. Chris, who has shared his experiences of gay conversion therapy on the show tonight, has started a petition calling for the so-called therapy to be outlawed across the nation.
It's a really difficult thing to combat. It's not as simple as a ban, and I'm saying that as someone who started a petition asking for the government to step in and facilitate some kind of legislation around gay conversion therapy. I think there's a couple of different approaches. So number one, it needs to be understood that gay conversion therapy is something that is occurring in the offices of health professionals. Okay, so it happens in counsellors' offices. It does happen with psychologists. I'm not saying that loads of psychologists are doing it, but it does happen. I've spoken to survivors of gay conversion therapy in the last few months since I started a petition who have talked to me about how they were at churches and Christian psychologists in the churches were quite open about the fact that they were treating patients for their homosexuality. So I think there is a need for some kind of therapeutic fraud provisions or something along those lines, so that, number one, it sends a message to people that the Australian government does not agree with gay conversion therapy. It's not okay. They agree with what all of the reputable health bodies around the world say, which is that it's unethical, it's dangerous, and it doesn't work. So that's number one. I think we also need to look at how we can educate people, and that's Christians, it's the gay community. It's about what gay conversion therapy is and how we can go about combating the ideologies. So the petition that I started is about stopping the actual therapy from happening in a professional setting, but there's the ideology that needs to be dealt with, and I think that the way to deal with that is through education. It's also about allowing survivors to tell their stories and to talk about the impact that gay conversion therapy has had on their lives.
You grew up thinking you were wrong, the fear of yeah. going to hell, the fear of eternal fire, and what that meant. Because even if we can make the changes from a political perspective and we can put the safeguards from a health perspective, how do we create a change in narrative from a religious one?
Yeah, it's really tough because, you know, I mean, whenever you're talking about changing people's ideologies, there's not one answer that's going to say, yep, that's going to be the fix. I think when we're talking about from a political perspective, that's one step. I think the only way that we can really make a dent in the way that people or the way that religious communities think about homosexuality is for people to start telling their stories and to allow survivors to have a voice to talk about the effect that SOS or ex-gay conversion therapy has had on their lives. That's the only way.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
That was Senator Janet Rice and Chris asking you to sign his petition to outlaw gay conversion therapy in Australia. If you'd like to sign the petition, head to change.org.au and search for Praying the Gay Away.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
That's it for another episode of The Informer, bringing you news and current affairs for Australia's LGBTI communities. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform. Don't forget to follow us on social media at The Informer on Joy 94.9 on Facebook and at The Informer Joy on Twitter. If you have a story or tip you'd like to share with us, get in touch at theinformer@joy.org.au. You've been listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. I'm Dean Arcuri.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.